I was like, what am I watching? Why?
I was like,
I'm going to take a nap until this is over.
And welcome to the Down in Front Podcast, the official podcast of downinfrontpodcast.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. If this is your first episode, we want to say we appreciate it. Thanks for hanging in there with us in this crazy year of 2020. But we made it. We're there. And the movie theaters are almost open?
No.
They said July 30th, but...
Yeah. Now it's August something or other.
I'm going to take the over on that one.
Tenet is now August 18th or something like that.
2022. So we'll see what happens with that. What we usually do here on the Down in Front Podcast that we review movies, TV shows, all we're having ourselves our favorite beverage or some sort of drink. Tonight, we are giving you a full review of Eurovision Song Contest, the story of Fire Saga. Really fun comedy movie, have Will Ferrell in it, Rachel McAdams. We're going to definitely talk about the cast and break it up a little bit later. But first, we're going to go through the round table. We're going to talk about what else we've been watching besides our feature film, where you can find that piece of work along with what we're drinking. So as always, I'm going to toss it over to the beautiful Brylin. Brylin, what you sipping on tonight and what else you got going for you?
Good evening, everyone. Great to be here as always. I am sipping on, once again, two podcasts in a row. I got the Brylin size Arizona iced tea.
Yes.
And I got the Southern Brewed sweet tea. Definitely not as good as my sweet tea or my grandma's sweet tea, but it's all right.
It's pretty good. I mean, for being basic, it's pretty good.
Yeah. And even though the price is not on the bottle, I did find out it's $1.50.
Oh, wait. Hold up. So that's cheaper than the other one that you had last week. Because that one was $2.99.
No. I just messed up on the price.
Oh, okay. So that's a good deal. Yes. No, yeah. Okay.
Cool. Absolutely. And what I've been watching recently is I've been finishing up a lot of shows that I've watched and everything. Firstly, I just want to say this year has been a great year for documentaries. There's been so many cool, not only documentary movies, but docuseries come out. I'm not even counting Tiger King now. That's like cellar dweller nowadays compared to other docuseries that have come out. And I did finish Disney Gallery's Mandalorian Behind the Scenes. And I want to say, just because of my love of Star Wars and how much I love just seeing the craft of making shows or movies, this is probably personally my favorite documentary of the year so far, or docuseries. I just love how they broke down every single type of aspect of how to make this TV show, whether it's the acting, the music, the directing, the technology behind it. And every single episode, you leave with this kind of just utmost respect for how they approach this show, which I thought was fantastic. You get your mind blown by the technology they use to make this show. You learn about like how Bryce Dallas Howard kind of cut her directing teeth through this show and what she learned from it. And I thought that was cool they let her share that. But you just also get this like nice little mix of why is Dave Filoni so good at telling Star Wars stories? And he's always leaving every single episode just impressing you the hell out of the saga of a Star Wars, because he can tell it probably better than anybody else aside from George. The guy absolutely loves George Lucas, which you find out in this series. And it was also really nice to see George's two cents in when he actually meets the child for the first time. I thought that was a very nice, endearing moment. So that is Disney Gallery's The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. Definitely watch it. It is fun, entertaining, and very insightful.
Brylin, so apparently Filoni is one of the rare people that has veto power to George Lucas. At least, oh, yeah. Like, for, you know, I wish George Lucas was more involved in the sequels, which we're not going to get into right now. But yeah, I was reading a bunch of behind the scenes on the Clone Wars, and they brainstormed a lot together, and George Lucas presented a bunch of ideas, and apparently Dave Filoni was just like, no, that doesn't make any sense with the canon established. And George Lucas said, you know, you're right. Let's do it your way. So it's kind of wild to think of, like, he's even more the guy than the guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's really impressive to see that, this guy that wears a fedora every day, that, is just like a super nerd, that George Lucas is kind of literally said, you're the baton carrier now, and please give him a movie to make. I want to see, or at least write Star Wars story, movies going forward. Dave Filoni needs to have a lot more creative power. What I've been also watching when it comes to documentaries is I checked out the new Bruce Lee documentary on ESPN Plus called Be Water. It's their new 30 for 30 that they brought out. I've watched a million Bruce Lee documentaries because I love Bruce Lee films. I think his philosophies are amazing. I just think every single aspect of his life was fascinating. And Be Water is probably doesn't. It's neat because, yeah, it treads over familiar ground that you might be used to hearing about Bruce Lee, about how he became to America and how he got into show business, but also how he started his own schools and everything when people wouldn't give him roles in Hollywood for being an Asian guy. But also, it does focus on what was his impact with the climate of civil rights and systemic racism at that time. And they do a fantastic job of that. They talk about the Asian stereotypes in Hollywood at that time. If you've seen Breakfast at Tiffany's or if you've seen any old Warner Brothers cartoons, it's definitely a very negative depiction of Asians or Japanese cultures or Chinese cultures. And Bruce Lee just comes in and literally just kicks the door down and redefines what not only what a star is, but an Asian leading man, whether if that was his intent or not. But he actually was a guy that lived by a code and rules. And was he like marching in protests and everything? Not really, but he was. He had his opportunities to kind of stand his ground. So just much like how Muhammad Ali didn't go to war in Vietnam, Bruce Lee would not take roles where the Asian character was derogatory or anything. He was only going to take a role if it was something that gave Asian culture positive light. Because he knew that when he got there, they were thinking, oh, Asian people are very robotic and they're quiet and everything. And there's this idea of a mild-mannered minority being the way minorities should be in society and everything. And he fought against that his entire life through the ways of martial arts and his martial arts philosophy and also being a movie star and everything. And so it was really cool that they were able to take his life and kind of apply it to show how he actually impacted civil rights at this time as well. So that's Be Water, and that's on ESPN Plus. I also watched another documentary, which was Undertaker, The Last Ride on WWE Network. And this was actually a great documentary as well.
No way.
Yeah, it's awesome. This is like the first time you get a multi-episode series and learn about the man behind The Undertaker, Mark Calloway. And you learn about like his journey through WWE, how he is the longest tenured wrestler in the WWE. He's probably the most celebrated wrestler in the WWE. And I don't know if y'all have heard the news or not about The Undertaker. Yeah, blew it. Okay.
I haven't, don't talk too much in detail about the documentary because it's on my wish list, but I do know what happens at the end of it.
Right. So, yeah. And I mean, it was kind of a very solemn and kind of poetic way to put the final chapter on a career. And it's surprising. You would think that, I mean, some people would argue that Undertaker should have retired right after he lost to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 31.
He shouldn't have lost to Brock Lesnar. That was the biggest farce I've ever seen in my entire life. and given the chance of the Patriots going 19-0 and Undertaker beating Brock Lesnar, I'm probably taking the Patriots 19-0. But it is a very hard decision. It is very hard.
It is, absolutely. But it is also a very cool documentary just to see, like, how this guy who's put his body on the line for the sake of entertainment for the last 30 years, you get a really good grasp of the struggle of actually having to put it in the past and know when your time is up. So definitely worth watching, and definitely check it out, especially if you grew up with The Undertaker or if you're a fan of wrestling in general.
I think it's interesting about a lot of those wrestlers where because there's not like a high school development, you know, like high school wrestling isn't professional wrestling, right? So right. It's not like, you know, playing high school basketball prepares you to college basketball for 1 year, prepares you for the NBA. So I always think it's very interesting that a lot of these guys and women too, and anything else, come out, and when they really hit their stride, they're all in their 30s, right? There's it's very rare to get like a 22-year-old phenom.
It is super rare. Absolutely.
So it's like, it's very interesting to me to see these wrestlers that are like aging, but they're all like 45. And so for The Undertaker to be a decade older than that, you know, and he's at a point where if he was working a desk job, he could still be fairly close to retiring at this point, you know, and for an athlete, like, I think the average tenure for like most professional leagues, maybe besides like hockey and maybe soccer, I just don't know about soccer, but like the other big four are relatively small, like 6 to 8 years is a successful career. So you're not even 30 and you have to have the life after. Whereas these dudes coming out of wrestling are, you know, maybe they have 15 to 20 years left of a productive working, you know, life, and they have to figure out what they have to do after that. And I can only imagine that if you've gotten most of your way through a working life doing one thing, and then you have to retire because your body can no longer do it anymore, that's got to feel devastating, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen like the cost of that, because there are many wrestler stories that we've seen that do not end with a quiet retirement or anything.
They have
30 years is unheard of in the wrestling world because of the amount of pain they go through.
They have the lowest life expectancy out of every major sport, including hockey, including football. It does a number on you.
Yeah,
absolutely. And they don't have healthcare.
No, they don't.
Nope.
But those are three amazing documentaries I've been watching recently. And I also finished Run season one, or the only season of it, I think. And I don't know if there's a way to sequelize this or anything.
Really? But I had the opposite of, I feel like they were trying to, but keep going.
Yeah. And overall, I mean, I enjoyed this show and I love this premise. The writing is fantastic. These characters that Domino Gleeson and Mara Weaver play are fantastic. Their relationship is very interesting. And some ways it feels real, and some ways it feels very existentialist as well at the same time. I do think that they don't really stick the landing. It kind of fizzles out at the end. And there is a moment in this series where something really dark happens. I'm like, why is this in here? And I definitely get the dark humor they were going for, but this moment just feels so, so different and belongs in such a different place. I'm like, did they really have to go to that point to kind of build the drama? I thought they were building great drama amongst the back and forth that that Billy and Rose were having. So it's really interesting show. I definitely say check it out and see if it is what you're interested in, especially if you like kind of off-center romantic comedies and stuff like I do. So if you're a fan of like more of the quirky, darker comedies out there, it's definitely worth checking out. It may not be for everybody, though.
Yeah.
Let's run on HBO.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think I talked about this previously, but the first two episodes, maybe three episodes of this was like, this is like the first episode was by far an amazing premise. It was a great sort of starter of it. It can introduce you to the world. And there's so many interesting elements that you're working with such a small, finite universe that they're created that has so many things that could happen. And I'm like, this is cool. But we don't need to see all these other things. You should just stay small. And that one made the acting between those two, Ruby is her name.
That's right.
Way more impactful. So I'll keep it spoiler free. I agree with you. I like this show. It feels like because it doesn't look like you may be able to come back, a lot of stuff is just straight up wasted. And it's like, oh, okay. I guess that's going to end here. Yeah, it's weird. Well, Ryland, as always, it's great to have you on, and it's great to see your face.
Well, thank you.
I will toss it over to Buddy Blue. Blue, what's going on, man? What are you sipping on tonight, and what else you got going for you?
What's going on? So right now I'm sipping on Own the Night. It's a hazy IPA. Solid by Radiant Pig. I like it. Definitely check it out if you're like New England style IPAs. As for what I've been watching, not a ton has changed. Unfortunately, I don't prioritize like TV or movies. So the two things that I've been watching are both TV shows. And so they've basically filled the entirety of my like allotted TV time. So still working through Community. That is phenomenal. It's probably one of the better comedies that has come out in the last like 30, 40, 50 ever. And I don't think gets enough credit for just its pure brilliance at times. The other one that I'm watching is The Clone Wars, and I wasn't prepared for this at all. Like we were talking about earlier with Dave Filoni, he's an absolute genius with this sort of stuff. I've gotten to a point where they're now just doing movies. So it's like 3-4 episodes in a row is just a movie. It's one continuous plot line. And I think it's made me like the prequels more, but also hate them more. And it's also made me hate the sequels more, just in no alike. Just because their caricaturizations are so spot on to the Star Wars ethos. They do make the prequels better because you could see glimpse of those characters in what we got in the prequels that I don't think really had the time to shine through. And so because we got a little bit more fleshed out in the backstories, it's almost made those characters better because you know where their motivations are coming from, which is insane to take like, you know, throwaway lines from a movie and make a whole story out of it and then have it connected and drive a decision that is in a movie that was made 20 years before the TV show came out.
I think one of the most brilliant things that Filoni did with that show was take a clone army, which you would think you wouldn't have to care about at all, and bring a lot of personality and interesting characters. Like, I consider Rex and Cody just as valuable as any Jedi in the series.
Yeah, I think they confirmed that, I believe Rex, is that the
battle? In Return of the Jedi.
He's the old guy with the beard in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool retconning there.
Yeah. Obviously, like,
wait, what?
So one of the clones in one of the main clones in the Clone Wars is the old guy in the Battle of Endor next to Han Solo. So on the ground, look up them standing next to the bunker, and there's an old guy with a beard right next to Han, and that's supposed to be.
Oh, cool. And,
yeah. So, yeah, no, it's been phenomenal. I do love how they don't shy away from like killing the clones. You know, like that's one thing that, you know, for a kid show, I was going to recommend this to a friend of the show, Dave Groves, him and his daughter when she gets a little older to like as a primer into Star Wars. But it's honestly like kind of too dark for, you know, 5-6-year-old because clones who you're supposed to root for, they get it all the time, you know, like they, And which I kind of love because it does underscore like this is a war and that this the decisions that people make, it matters. I just watched the arc with Krell, where he pits clone troopers against each other. Spoiler alert. And they basically just took every Vietnam War movie I've ever seen and put it into a cartoon form with stormtroopers. And it was awesome. It was brilliant. So yeah, Community and Clone Wars. I've also been playing, this is the other TV time I get is video game time. I'd make this sound like I live with like my parents and I'm 4 years old, but this is self-imposed. I beat finally The Last of Us and I've moved on to the first little bit of Last of Us 2. Didn't see that coming, Last of Us 2. And I'm pretty pumped to see how the rest of the game goes.
Be careful, there's a lot of spoilers out there.
I know. So. I found a minor one by mistake, and I'm a little bit upset about it, but not really. It doesn't really matter.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Blue, it is always great to have you on. It's great to see your face. Hopefully, if you do play those video games, you can stream it on our Twitch channel.
I wouldn't know how to do that.
Fair enough. My name is Warren. I will be your host this evening. I'm currently still sipping on. It's still summertime, so want a mango for your boy. Shandies all day, every day, besides wine. So that's also pretty cool. As always, I'm always watching a bunch of stuff. I was super pumped and excited that Dr. Sleep Director's Cut came out on, not only early, but it came out on... HBO Max, which is actually pretty cool. So it's like legit 3 hours. And I like, oh, I already love the movie. I think I talked about how much I enjoyed that film. I like the added about, I think 20, 30 minutes that just kind of fleshes out the story a bit more in the universe. You just sort of start to understand what else people are doing. And it was really weird. I'm like, oh man, they cut that out. They should have left that in. This is really helpful stuff. This is helpful data to use so we can sort of understand what these characters and other characters are thinking of each other and what these characters and some of their motivations are just helping the plot and the story go from point A to point B. So it was pretty cool. I liked it. It didn't seem like it was kind of forced. I think Emma really enjoyed it. It was the first time she watched a movie and she really enjoyed it. So that is on HBO Max. It is 3 hours, but it didn't feel like 3 hours. So...
Is there more Crow Daddy in it?
A little bit. Not enough as I'd like to see, though.
I was curious if the director's cut would have focused more on like fleshing out the backstory of the family, or is it just like overall just extended scenes or extra scenes? Like, do they go into a little bit more about like Danny's issues? Or
little bit. They do go into a little bit more about the True Knot. That was nice to kind of understand a little bit of their what they are, basically.
That was okay.
Cool. Yeah. A little bit. Not a lot. I mean, it's only 30 minutes. Just so enough. Yeah, it was enough. Yeah.
That's cool.
Do I want to see a 4-hour movie? Yes. Do I want to see a mini series? Absolutely. I would take a mini series way over a 3-hour movie because you have that time to breathe and I think it'll be great. So that is the first thing I've been watching. I also went over to HBO Max because I guess I'm living there now. And I checked out this new show with Matthew Reese, called Perry Mason. Have you guys heard of this?
Yes, I grew up watching Perry Mason as a kid.
Oh, nice. Okay. Blew it? No, of course not. You're under a rock. It's okay. We know.
I think that's an Aussie song, though. So I know that one.
That's Mr. Crowley.
I think he makes reference to Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah, he does have a song called Perry Mason.
Yeah, he does have a song called Perry Mason.
Well, it was completely, he's like, okay, I mean, I messed up. That's okay. No, Perry Mason.
But I was right.
It seems like this is a good, I think this is one of the darker shows I've ever seen in a long time. It's gritty, it's raw. I know I say that a lot, but I think it doesn't, I feel like the camera stays on the moments that makes you uncomfortable. And the way I can describe it is like a period piece of True Detective season one and season three. We know we don't talk about season two.
Rachel McAdams, though.
Rachel McAdams so hot. I am really enjoying the show. It's very entertaining. I think it's hitting a lot of stuff, especially a person who does not like period pieces, because majority of period pieces tend to ignore the black people and ignore the racism of it. I'm like, okay, fuck you. I'm good. So as a period piece, I think it is something interesting. I feel like they're going, you know, Charlie's Angels 2 full throttle at everything they want to talk about. And it's interesting. It's entertaining. It's covering a wide span of a lot of shit that's happening, systematic shit that's occurring today. So I'm super interested about it. Like, it's dark. It's kind of scary. It's fucked up. It also has like that element of a kind of crime drama that I usually tend to like a little bit. But it's kind of all wrapped up into one Perry Mason's character, who you're starting to follow and see, oh, this person is really troubled. And it's also really sad, kind of like not quite self-destructive, but you're trying to figure out what happened to his past as we're also trying to figure out what's going on today in that world. So only two episodes right now. I think it just started. So I'm pretty pumped to check that out. That's Perry Mason streaming on HBO. I am assuming it's on HBO platform. I don't know what the hell they're doing with the Go, Max, or Now anymore, but that is what else I've been watching. And then two other things I'm super pumped about. Adventure Time finally dropped this BMO adventure on HBO Max. Super fucking pumped to inhale that. I haven't seen it yet, but I saw that. I was like, oh, finally, this is why. This is the reason I got HBO Max, because of Boondocks and Adventure Time. I don't care about anything else. I really got it for those two things. So whenever those comes out, I'm canceling my subscription. So hurry up. So I'm really excited. I haven't gotten new Adventure Time info in a lot. And my current book club book that we're reading has a ton of Adventure Time references. That is weird, but it's amazing. So that's definitely one of my favorite shows, if you ever hear me talk about it before. And then I'm also excited to check out, it looks like they actually are going forward and starting this Sunday, actually, Mamba Out is set to premiere for the first two episodes. Have you guys heard about this?
Yeah.
I haven't.
No. I'm optimistic it'll be good. I feel like it was rushed after The Last Dance.
Well, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's about Kobe Bryant and 2010 Lakers, Bryant. It's an 8-part documentary series. Looks like they're going to be streaming it on YouTube and Instagram. I don't know how you stream something on Instagram, but all right. I'm pretty pumped about it. I think, I don't know how long that they were making this for Blewett. I don't think that it's rushed because of The Last Dance. I think that it was probably rushed because of his passing, and they probably want to, like, I'm sure that this was not set to come out this year. Yeah. I don't think so.
Thought it was like 2 or 3 years in the future.
Yeah. But now I'm sure there was other stuff that they probably wanted to interview and talk to him about. They just can't. Right. So, I'm kind of bummed. I'm kind of saddened. Even on Last Dance and Michael Jordan's alive, I was still like welling up and kind of crying and shit like that. So this is going to be a heartbreaker, but I'm really excited for this weekend. That's, you know, Mamba Out on Instagram and YouTube. Super pumped to really kind of sink our teeth into that, because he's one, like, I mean, dude's an icon. And so it's going to be really nice, especially for a year that we had. It's going to be nice just to see some, you know, who he is as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be good. I'm just hopeful that they did it right. You know, whenever you rush a production cycle, because his story is one that deserves to be told with respect, you know, and this is a diehard Boston Celtics fan saying this. So I just really hope that they nail down the editing, they nail down everything else that goes into a TV show.
I'm curious. I'm excited about it. I'm nervous. I'm excited about it.
Me too.
Yeah.
I hope they did them right. You know.
Doing well. Yeah. Sure.
I'm also kind of interested in checking out that Adventure Time special, because all I know about Adventure Time is making bacon pancakes.
Bro, I'm not gonna even let's not even hop on that. I don't want to open up that book. All of my devices are named from Adventure Time. I named my dog Jake for that reason. His name is full name is Jake the dog. It's great. But Brylan, I think if you're curious, you should watch the first couple episodes. I think it's 10, maybe 12 minutes each. And I think Jesse said it best. This is by far, this show has the best continuity of anything I have ever seen in my life. And the storytellings and character development and growth is astounding. I have never seen anything crafted so well in a 12-minute span for such a long period of time. And it's also super heartbreaking and sad as well of things that's happening to these characters, because it moves you and it's so emotional, it makes you cry on how difficult that they're trying to explain these scenarios in a fucking cartoon show. And as the kid ages, they also aged Finn's voice too. So I thought that was actually, it was really smart of them just to keep almost all the original players from beginning all the way to the end of this the show. So
it even has better continuity than BoJack?
Well, I haven't seen BoJack, but yes. Okay. Because, yes. I haven't seen it, but yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah, BoJack is brilliant with its continuity. Yeah. References.
I actually need to start BoJack. I'm probably going to do that sometime soon. I think we talked about it before. That's one of these sort of divisive shows that I think is kind of interesting. So it's,
yeah.
So we're going to move into our spoiler section. We are talking about Eurovision. We are going to definitely be spoiling the movie. I guess the movie can be sort of spoiled. It is comedy. There's some stuff that we want to talk about it. If you have not seen the film, definitely go check it out. It's streaming on Netflix right now. We're going to take a quick break. And once we return, we're going to be in our full spoiler edition of Eurovision. And we'll see you soon. And we are back, and we are the Down in Front podcast in our spoiler section for Eurovision, the story of the Fire Saga. As we usually do, we're going to break this up into a couple of sections. So we're going to talk about the actings and characters. We're also going to talk a little bit about our overall experience of the actual Eurovision. And yes, if you're ignorant like me, didn't realize that was a thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about our MVPs. Who do we think actually kind of won the film and why? And before we give you to our lasting thoughts and our conclusion. So as always, I'm going to toss over to Brylan. Brylan, let's open it up and talk about our acting and characters and maybe sometime a little bit of the history of Eurovision and your experience.
Yeah. So I've been watching Eurovision off and on for the last, I think, like decade or so. I kind of caught on to it when many of my friends caught on to it, which was when Lordi won, which if you're not familiar with Lordi, they are Gwar, but from Finland. And they like fire and wings and stuff. And if they take off their makeup, they get fired from the band. But it was like the first time like a metal act had won, and it was the first time that a rock band had won the contest. Usually it's like your ballads and your kind of pop songs that win this contest. So I thought it was like, oh, that's neat. They went with something kind of different and unique. And year after year, it's a really neat contest, which kind of balances on countries sending the most utterly ridiculous performers they could just to have a little fun, and countries taking it a little too seriously and doing all sorts of crazy things like geopolitical ramifications based on how they vote and everything. Like, it's notorious, like, all the Eastern Bloc countries will vote for Russia regardless of what the performance is. And nobody votes for the UK because everybody hates the UK. That's a literal thing in Eurovision. So it is definitely one of the most unique song contests out there. And one thing I really love about this movie, not only is it hilariously lampooning what Eurovision is, it actually honors Eurovision a really cool way and just kind of the best way I can describe Eurovision as a whole is it's Europe's time to kind of show off how wacky and weird and different their culture is compared to America or other countries around the world. And it's where they can actually make their personalities shine. So it's great entertainment, but it's also a really cool eye-opener. If you've never traveled over to European countries or anything, it's a really neat performance that you can actually get to see.
So, Bryland, I've kind of a unique story with this one. I was lucky enough in high school to go on a couple European adventures, and our tour guide, so it was through a company, and we get one tour guide that took us through the whole thing, and he had traditionally worked with our high school, so like they knew each other, like the teachers and him. He was phenomenal, amazing human being. Conrad, if you're out there, you're awesome. I have no idea what your last name is. It's probably a bunch of syllables because he's German. But he, you know, here's a bunch of 17-year-old American kids, and he started talking about Eurovision. And for us, this was probably what, like 2006 or so? You know, American Idol was still at its peak. And so us being Americans, we're like, oh, this is dumb. This is just like the less cool American Idol.
And American Idol's taken mad seriously compared to this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Eurovision's taken seriously too, but like, I thought it would be similar where like, you know, it's one person up on stage and like they're wearing something nice, you know, like and official and like
there's this professionalism.
Yeah. And they're singing like, you know, some like blues song with like a lot of technicality to the singing performance. And so we're like, oh, this is just gonna be some stupid European version that like no one could make it in America. So they're doing the Europe version. And then he put on Vertka Sedutska, who is, I forget where they're from, but it is a cross-dressing Eastern European that sung a song in five different languages. And it was the most incredible thing I've ever seen for my like 17-year-old mind to take in. And then from there, it became, you know, a whole bunch of other things. There was a Turkish singer that year that was incredible as well, for different reasons, more towards the American pop style rather than like this own unique. But ever since then, it's been this amazing thing of just like Brian said, like these countries go over the top. And if you thought that they were making a comedy out of Eurovision, the movie, they weren't. That was true to form. How this competition works, like the whole wheel thing that, you know, he's running down, that stuff happens. I think it makes it funnier to know that Will Ferrell, his wife is from
Norway, I think.
Yeah. I think one of the Nordic states. And so she got him into it. And so this is more than a parody. This is actually, like you said, Brian, this is an homage. This is I'm going to take the things that I love about this competition and maybe jazz them up a little bit, but like, it's pretty true to form on how it goes. And I loved it for that. Like,
yeah,
the fact that this stupid underpublicized in America competition is getting two A-listers to work on and show Americans what this is all about is phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for the record, Vertka Sedutska is from the Ukraine.
Yep.
And I mean, speaking of Will Ferrell, for me, this is like a return to form for him. Like past couple movies have not really done it for me. Holmes and Watson was just an absolutely terrible film. But he has had some really cool bit parts. And I was like, maybe Will Ferrell's gotten to that point where he's good, like popping up every once in a while. His stint in Between Two Ferns movie was fantastic. But man, he definitely came out and shined. He shows that he can still bring these really cool and funny man-child characters to life. And Lars might be one of the most endearing man-child actor performances he's done. There are so many great moments he has. There's a whole part where he's talking about how much shit they just went through in a competition. It's like one of the most hilarious things because he just keeps saying the word shit over and over. He has this thing where he is just absolutely berating Americans for just like loving Starbucks or putting liens on their credit cards, which is absolutely ridiculous. And it's funny because the Americans just keep on loving Lars for him shitting on them. He actually has a really decent singing voice. I would not see Will Ferrell be like a music performer or put out his own album, but I could see him do like one of those Lonely Island albums of like a bunch of spoof songs or covers. And that could be successful because he can carry a tune and he can know what pitch is and everything. So it's actually impressive to see him be one of the few non-performers that actually is singing in this entire movie. Did Dan Stevens
do his Beauty and the Beast singing?
I don't know. I know he didn't do this singing.
He did not do this one. Neither did Rachel McAdams.
They blended Rachel McAdams' voice, so
that was entirely dubbed.
When she's in the hotel room Husovic, that's her.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but it's a Swedish pop star that does Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
I thought Dan Stevens was a singer.
But he's not an opera singer.
That I was going to say, that was a very particular style singing. But it is also a little weird that they hired a guy that I thought could actually sing to play a singing role and then didn't have him sing. It just seems like a weird casting.
So I think in the reason for that, Blewett is... I think there was something had happened with the production of the film that he was supposed to sing. There was a headline that I was reading that says that he was supposed to sing, but because of the pandemic that had hit from before, he couldn't, and so they had to end up inserting something else. I think he was supposed to, though. That was the original plan.
Interesting. Although dubbing it would have been the easy part, because you just do that in home studio.
Yeah, there must have been some reason for it. Like he got trapped somewhere where he couldn't record or something.
Also, opera is a completely different game than pop. You know, like Beauty and the Beast was a pop soundtrack and this was an opera soundtrack. And it's, it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. Will Ferrell also is like the one that makes kind of like the Icelandic culture shine through here. There, one thing I really like is like a lot of the side characters and everything are just like people that live in Iceland, and they got him to just play these roles. But Will Ferrell's Lars, I mean, definitely the running joke about if he's related to Sigrid or not is hilarious. But just also seeing him just try to be this guy that stands out from this very homely, small town Icelandic culture is just great. And it's just good. It's just hilarious to see him in that role. Rachel McAdams is also great. I think she is, she's America's sweetheart. Even if she's from Canada, everybody has to come from somewhere. It's okay. and I think her character, Sigrid, has a wonderful story that is told. She plays the straight man role against Lars for the best part. She has this very ingenue, like Bjorkish Icelandic pixie thing going on. Her obsession with elves is fantastic. There's not a moment like when Rachel McAdams is on the screen, you're just like smiling because she's just so sweet and just endearing through the whole thing.
Yeah, even kind of going off of that, I can't agree with you more, Brylan. I really enjoyed Rachel McAdams, and it seems like she was putting on, and they had like a accent. They were definitely kind of hamming up in so many different areas, but her performance was oddly endearing and sweet and kind and caring. And it was like, oh, she's actually acting the shit out of this role in this movie that doesn't quite match, but it also made it so that, kind of like we were talking about the piece of honoring, they could have easily made this into a parody film and made fun of everybody at Eurovision. And I'm not saying they didn't do that, because they definitely kind of did. But in this case, their main characters and their leads, there was somebody who cared about this so much and was motivated. And there was that moment when she was like, yeah, even if I'm going to go sit there, I'm an artist, we're going to get booed and I'm going to sit there and like not get any votes. And that's that, because that's what I'm going to do. And I'm like, that's actually really, really like, that's way more uplifting than I thought this movie. And I'm like glued to the screen now. I was like, oh, y'all put this in this movie? I don't really see, and you don't really see this in really any of Will Ferrell movies at all. So I really like what they actually did here. But going off of that point, I love the fact that what they did with the names of the characters, because you have Eric, who is Will Ferrell's father, played by Pierce Brosnan. Will Ferrell's character name is Lars Eric Sung, and yeah. Rachel McAdams' name is Sigrid Eric's daughter. And they was like, okay, what? And it's like, oh yeah, I don't think we're related. And she's like, no, we're not related. It's like, yeah, I don't think so.
That is an actual thing in like a lot of cultures from up north, where they literally take their names. So the Anglican way is your job profession, right? So that's where you get like Mike Carpenter Smith
and Baker,
or you know, yeah you see like those types of names. You also get it with like, this is an older one, but like Johnson is just Johnson, at some point Richardson, someone Stevenson, was John's Jackson. Son. So that's continued to this day in Iceland, and I believe I think Sweden as well, where you don't take a family last name. You take, so you'll be like siblings, like my sister would be like Steven's daughter and I would be Steven's son.
Yep.
We'd have separate last names, even though we were related. And so like that happens to this day, but it's just, they play it off so funny where it's like, maybe we're related. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's like actually like a real thing that Iceland deals with, is just how, I mean, they're kind of like the human cheetah, is that there's not much genetic differences between all Icelanders. So it's tough for them to actually kind of build like relationships and continue to have a robust gene pool, because they are just a very monocultural society that's on this very small island in the middle of the ocean. It's very unique situation they're in.
Yeah.
But I think along with everything we said about Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, Dan Stevens, I've never seen him in a comedy, I don't think. So he surprised me, like how humorous he was. And I thought that the voice that they gave him, I love how this operatic voice is not going for like a classic opera voice. It's like an operatic, it's like if an opera person wanted to sing pop and they're just trying really, really hard to show off. And it just comes off as so ridiculous. It just accentuates how ridiculous his character is. They kind of introduce him to be this like the main bad guy in the movie, but they actually pull a neat little twist with Alex Limtoff, that his character is not as much as he seems, and there's always these little context clues just going about like his sexuality and everything throughout the movie, and he's supposed to be, and like how Lars says that he's a sex player and stuff, and that he's going to just try to sex up Sigrid and everything. Alex, we find that that I could see like through this, like some people might cringe at his character, where it could be perceived that his character is ultimately like just a bad gay joke. But I think it's very clever that they make his character Russian, so it comes off as a criticism of how Russia treats their LGBTQ community, and how they even exploit them as well, which has actually been factual events in Eurovision, where they have had flamboyant homosexual performers go to Eurovision and they win Eurovision for Russia, but Russia still does not recognize them as citizens. So it's definitely a really interesting subversive critique of Russia when it comes to a certain community of people, but it's also done utterly clever and hilarious as well.
I thought it was also interesting where they addressed gender identity too, where like, you know, they said, oh, well, if you're not gay, are you trans or non-binary, you know, like,
yeah.
And so now you're straight again, which is interesting to me, where we've finally reached a point where it's that movement is at a level where folks can make it into a mainstream comedy movie and talk about it. This might be a little bit controversial, but I'm a big proponent of comedy. I think comedy breaks a lot of boundaries down and bridges a lot of barriers as long as it's respectful. And I think that something's got to be recognized enough for folks to turn it into some sort of comedic faction. And so the fact that we're there and we can have a conversation in a comedy movie about like folks that are not within the traditional gender spectrum, or excuse me, that are in the gender spectrum, not within the traditional gender binary. It was kind of fascinating for me, especially out of like not a quirky comedy. This is definitely was probably meant to be released in theaters as a mainstream Will Ferrell, you know, Dirty Sanchez production, you know, and to get that level, what I say? Oh yeah, it is
Dirty Sanchez.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, come on, that's where they get it from. So, but like, you know, to get that in that level of a joke to like talk about it freely was kind of encouraging to me. You know, yeah. Again, as someone who sees it as long as it's done respectfully, it is a way to bridge boundaries. It was kind of encouraging.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, there with this movie, I mean, I love how they do honor like Eurovision as a performance, but also that they did take the time and consideration to bring in actual Eurovision performers. Like one of the past winners was the piano player that they actually give money to. Do we see a lot of them in Alex's house in Scotland, where they have this sing-along moment, and the sing-along moment is just a fun, enjoyable time to watch. It's not about humor or anything. It's just about celebration of music and singing and stuff, and it's just a lot of fun and endearing, and you get to see like just how different each of these Eurovision performers and winners has been through the past. I was just hoping that they would throw Lordi in there just in case, but I guess they had other things to do at the time.
Well, and also like, you got the Lordi experience earlier.
In the movie. We did get a little bit of Lordi in here with a little homage to them, which I thought was
really I love that. Oh, so I love that scene in general, just stating that for a fact, but I also love that the second song that they chose to include in the like montage for a competition that was built around singers primarily was a completely auto-tuned Cher's Believe. And I thought I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but I thought that was incredibly ironic to choose a song that was built around not singing and then make a bunch of singers sing it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like the over the top ridiculousness, kind of like when people break out into song, and I'm like, oh, we have like a musical theater moment here. This is great. I'm all for any sort of musicals. That was cute.
Yep.
I thought, and it was nice because it just felt like, again, going back to the honoring piece, Brightling, like, see people from all shapes and sizes, so many diverse people, so many people that I'm like, at first, I'm like, why are they showing these random people? I'm like, ah, you know what? I'm pretty sure these people are actual performers. Yeah. And so that makes it even cooler, right? It's not, you know, they actually showing a people who are there, unlike Cats, right? They have a bunch of these performers who are all like fucking Cats. Weird looking in Cats. Yeah. But also like giving them their time to shine a little bit. And like, they probably have never been in the movie at all.
Right.
And if they have been, it's probably not in the movie that would be watched with these types of caliber talent around them, Dan Stevens, Rachel McAdams, and you know, Will Ferrell. So I thought it was actually pretty cool.
Do you know who the one get that I wish they had that I can't believe they didn't actually? And this is a lot of people's introduction to Eurovision, even if they don't know this. Epic sax guy, Moldova's 2011, entry into Eurovision hit viral sensation from one dude gyrating his hips and playing the saxophone. Everyone knows.
I know that guy.
Yeah, that's from Eurovision. So that's from Eurovision. And I cannot believe they didn't get him to play in this comedy movie, because like that is instantly approachable by pretty much everyone on this planet who's been on the internet since 2012.
Yeah, absolutely.
But maybe he's too expensive, honestly. His asking price might be through the roof, because he's the epic sax
guy. Maybe it has something to do with Russian and being connected with not being one. Like, a lot of people are being made fun of here, and so could be.
But it's Moldova. Who the hell knows where that is? But it's not Russia.
Yeah. I mean, they let Azerbaijan into this contest. Yeah. That's not even in Europe. But other things, I did enjoy this movie as a whole. I do think it did run a little bit too long. And I think a perfect place where they could have just cut it down, make it a little bit shorter. As much as it would hurt, it hurts me, because it does have a very funny moment. And it is when Lars goes back home after they have their semifinal breakdown, where the wheel runs away, but they finish their song and he just feels like all his dreams have been crushed and everything. I do feel like that's just a little extra, just separation between Lars. Like, they have a lot of back and forth between Lars and Sigrid of bickering and fighting. Did they sleep with other people? And one of my favorite scenes is as soon as Lars opens the hotel room to Mita and she grabs his balls and he goes, "Oh, my balls." And he goes, "I'm scared." But I did think him going back and his dad giving him a pep talk that he's a Viking and he needs to go fight for Sigrid, while he talks about how he let Sigrid's mom slip out of his fingers. It's funny because of how straight-laced Pierce Brosnan plays it, but it's also adds so much more time to it. But I do love that scene because we get to know about elves. And I love that we don't see the elves. We just see their actions. And I just love that they left it at that.
Yeah, I hear you, Rylan. I think that's one of the big cons against this is, at one point I sat there and was like, man, I don't know if we needed to have this full race to the Eurovision in the car bit like that. Right. That there were just things that was just running on. I'm like, bro, how long is this movie? And I didn't want to look at the runtime until we talk about it tonight, just so I can truly see that. Was this over 2 hours? And it was over 2 hours. I'm like, ooh, you need to have a tight, maybe a little bit over 90 minute movie for this. And there was just a lot of stuff that just wasn't needed.
You could have even kept the car thing, because I thought that was funny. It was kind of the three quarters of the way around the circle with the Americans, with the end result being them at the bar.
Yeah, but you only needed the beginning and the end. I thought that would have been completely fine. I don't think you need that middle bit, because he was just terribly mean at that point. I don't think it added to anything with that joke that they were building out.
I thought it was wicked funny and it could have stayed. That being said, I do agree with Brylan that you could have kept the car ride joke in it if you just turned him around at the airport. He gets it to the airport. Yeah. Maybe his dad flew in and is just like, "You idiot, you're in the finals." Something could have happened there, and that would have saved you the 10-15 minutes of him going home and figuring it out on his own.
But I mean, I still would have wanted to have seen something happen with the elves.
But I think that's the part that I was just like, I feel like this is clearly a movie about Sigrid. And as much as Lars wants to be the main, he's not. And he really shouldn't be, because she is the one that is actually doing and speaking from the heart. And there was even a moment of Lars learned, taught me to sing. And her mom's like, "No, he didn't. You learned to sing," but not relying everything on this one main character. She needs to step out of his shadow for a moment. So when they got separated, I was really excited that I thought we were going to stay with Sigrid for a bit. And that's what I you know, going back to your point, Brylan, then we follow Will Ferrell because it's a movie about Will Ferrell for like 30 minutes, it feels like. And I was like, I think we could have just stayed with Rachel McAdams and maybe had a couple of cutaways. But
you know, it's you're not going to get away from Will Ferrell in a comedy movie.
But he's already, I mean, I'm not trying to get away from him, but no. This fucker was already in the entire film.
But that's what I mean. Like they knew where that movie was going to go. Like those scenes were genuinely funny. I do agree with you though, that like they probably should have cut the whole boat scene and the whole elf scene. You could even, I liked it, but you could have incorporated him believing in elves later in the film, like after they won or something. Like you could have done a lot to get, because I made the same thing. I looked at the movie runtime because I thought I was going to squeeze it in before this podcast, like right after I got out of work. And then I looked at the runtime and I was like, this is over 2 hours. That's not happening. You know? And so I was like, I have to watch this before the, you know, a night before. So it was definitely a little long for a comedy movie.
Yeah. And it's interesting because since this is based on a song contest and everything, that they have a lot of songs in here and they have some spoof songs. And it's amazing because a lot of these songs are fantastic. They hook you and they get in your head and you want to hum along to them all the time. I know, Blue, when I first heard about this movie, I sent you the music video to Volcano Man. I was like, we gotta review this movie because that was enough to kind of get me excited for this. And we get so many more songs that are just fantastic and amazing in this movie. I've listened to the soundtrack. I watched this movie 3 times. I think more for the music than anything, because I think the whole lead up to Sigrid singing Husavik is actually a beautiful moment. It's a like perfect way to kind of cap off what happens with these two characters and everything. I think the song, even though it talks about like seagulls singing and synchronized whales and stuff for their small fishing hometown, it actually is a beautiful song that I hope gets nominated for awards later down the road. That or Ya Ya Ding Dong, because Ya Ya Ding Dong is also very fantastic.
Sorry, that got me.
Yeah,
such a huge turn there. I was like, where is he gonna, what is he gonna make this?
I just want some Roger Ebert like person just Ya Ya Ding Dong, Ya Ya Ding Dong at like the award shows.
Yeah. And the winner is Ya Ya Ding Dong by Will Ferrell.
No, imagine if they announce someone else and then Kanye West gets up there and goes, but I think Ya Ya Ding Dong had the greatest music movie moment of the entire year.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of interesting because these songs that they make on a technical level are actually kind of better than your Eurovision songs that you get. I mean, there's definitely some ridiculous songs. I don't know all the stipulations, but a lot of times these songs are just about the contest, or they're just talking about the country they're from, or like fun, or they just say love or la la la. They don't even use words in some of these songs. And it was actually impressive that the songs that they actually made for this movie are songs that you enjoy and you can even sing along to and everything. And I think one thing that might be a bit of a detriment is because it kind of is a little bit better than what Eurovision offers in terms of song quality. But I mean, the actual Eurovision actually has a lot more ridiculousness than we see. We do definitely get like breaking of wing, like falling out of a wing harness while rising up onto a stage. We also have things like 21st Century Viking, and as soon as he opens his voice, I'm laughing my ass off. We have fire everywhere. We have the wheel getting loose and everything. But we don't have anything as crazy as like Iceland's actual last entry, which was a BDSM performance on stage. Or there's one performance one year where a guy was like had an actual live wolf on stage, and he was actually holding it and caressing it in weird ways while he was singing. It can definitely be a show that gets really, really crazy at times.
This movie is definitely like a stripped down version of that show. Like, yeah. I think I said it before, but like, they didn't go full bore on the songs and the pageantry. They could have gone harder, but I think it's one of those, like, those ratios of like believability. You know, if they actually did a true to form Eurovision performance, no one would have believed anything about it. You know, like right. They would have been like, oh, this is just Will Ferrell acting zany. So they had to like tone it down again. Debbie said, I'm with you, Brownland. Like, I thought the homage to, you know, even 80% of what a true Eurovision performance is was still phenomenal. They could have phoned this in so hard and just written a bunch of Demi Lovato songs and, you know, call it a day, with maybe a little bit of promiscuous dancing to like back it up. And I think American audience would have just like accepted that as Eurovision completely. But instead it was like an actual, like, I could believe some of these acts were Eurovision acts, maybe not winners.
Yeah. Semifinals.
But the fact that a comedy movie made a bunch of acts that could have believably be in the semifinals is kind of incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, since there's so many good songs, is this technically a musical? Or could be a musical? I mean, I can actually see this premise and everything being like that next like big budget Broadway musical. Just like how they had SpongeBob as a musical or Spider-Man as a musical.
You know, you're not wrong. I mean,
they could actually write a couple more songs and make this into that Spider-Man next Broadway crazy terrible. Musical.
You're not wrong, Brandon. This could be. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's funny. It's also touching as well as, yeah. I mean, you could be onto something. You should write it, man.
Nope. My idea. Don't take it.
I'm sure it's Will Ferrell and whoever wrote this movie.
Oh, yeah. I guess they had a role to play.
Just a bit part, small. Bradley, you got anything else?
I think that I'm good, man. I'll let y'all talk for a bit.
Blue, what else you got? I'm all set. It looks like I checked all my points off.
Yeah, I think that got through most of them. We talked about the music. We talked about the two main characters. Dan Stevens, I thought with Mita was... I'll spoiler alert myself for later. That's probably the MVP, the performance. I'll say this again, so I'll just repeat myself, but maybe I'll just cut and paste and I won't say anything and not bore you. But I thought the relationship was so genuine, where he was looking for a way out, right? He had everything. He had the houses, he had the wealth, which I don't think most Eurovision people have. They're just regional stars in their country. And this is a way of like broadening their appeal. You know, they're not dirt poor, but I they don't have houses in seven different countries, which is a massive difference between American Idol. If you win American Idol or come in third in American Idol, you do have, you know, houses across the world. Whereas Eurovision is definitely not. I have no idea. That might be completely false. Don't hold me to that one. Anywho, so he was actually a very human character where he had everything but what he couldn't, and his sexuality couldn't be explored, you know, at least publicly, because he was representing Russia. And like Brylan said, like, that's really happened in the past and continues to happen. And his conversations with Mita, the Greece representative, were just like very human, because she was playing along with him, and she, you know, kind of like helped antagonize the two wayward Icelanders, you know, if you will. But in the end, she did really want to see what was best from him. And I thought their interplay was like, cause they seem like the villains, right? On first glance, right. But like they're more than that. It was kind of touching to see, two people trapped in their own realities that couldn't get out, and that were like trying to escape by going through the innocence that were Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams. So yeah, I thought that was awesome. The music was phenomenal. Yeah. Yeah. Ding Dong was probably the best banger of this year. I don't know. Has anyone else released an album since COVID came out? Like, what are the other bangers that have come out?
I'm sure they have, but
no, yeah. It's just Yaya. Oh, it's I Saw a Tiger and Yaya Ding Dong. that is legit going to be 2020s or 20 the Grammy Awards in 2021.
When you get to the Billboard Music Awards, highest selling songs,
hottest.
Saw a Tiger,
hottest record. What was it? A record of the year. It's just going to be Yaya Ding Dong, I Saw a Tiger, and then like two other arbitrary songs that come out in the rest of the year. Who's got albums lined up? Katy Perry probably has.
I think Kanye's working on something again.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Will Smith, maybe.
Let's just pick arbitrary rappers from 20 years ago.
I think it's interesting that the actual villain in this movie, the Icelandic banker, he actually has a really good point of why they shouldn't win Eurovision, because they are a bankrupt country.
Well, but I mean, it is great because he also like clearly goes overboard. I'm like, yeah, you actually have a legit reason, but blowing everybody up just so that they don't win is like, oh my God, it's so ridiculous.
That was the L's. So they went too far.
So I say that about every once in a while, Boston gets floated as an Olympic city. And I would hate that crap. Oh my God, that would be miserable. First of all, for anyone who's not in Boston right now, who's listening to this podcast, Boston shuts down at 11:30 because we might be one of the more liberal states in this country, but we are ruled by Puritans. And so if you come to a 3 week long international party and you're told to go home at 11:30, that's not going to happen. And then
you're going to destroy things.
It's going to be uncomfortable for everyone. Also, like we don't have the infrastructure. So stay out, because I don't want my taxes to go up to pay for a 3 week long party. I can just go anywhere else and do that. Anywho,
Austin is a small city. You would have to go to Western Mass for most of these events.
You'd have to go to New Hampshire, where all the mountains are, because we could only host the winter games. And good luck having fun in New Hampshire without blowing a finger off or two. New Hampshire's pretty fun. New Hampshire's pretty fun.
Old guy saying that, hey, you kids, get off my lawn. Like, please don't come here.
New Hampshire's pretty fun, but like it's not like world renowned. I thought he had a great point of like why they shouldn't win, and then he just went over the top on that. I also did love Demi Lovato's character, just from the terrible ghost line. Like that was
great.
That was
like, where have you been?
I thought that was gonna go so many different ways, and then it went that way, and I lost it. I absolutely lost it. I think those are the big ones.
Cool. All right, so let's move into our MVPs. Who do we think we want? Who absolutely won the film? I know we talked about it a little bit, so I'll toss. I have you start, Brylan.
Yeah, so we get introduced to a guy named Olaf, and Olaf is an angry man, very angry man. In fact, he's so angry, the only thing that makes him happy is if he gets to hear Yaya Ding Dong. And for that one reason, Olaf is the MVP of this movie, because every single time Olaf screams, play Yaya Ding Dong, he's literally telling him to get back inside while they're on break and play the song. He is fantastic. And like when they want to play like their hits, I mean, basically their hit song or the song that where they wow the crowd at Eurovision, Olaf is just getting up and says, Yaya Ding Dong, play Yaya Ding Dong now. And I just loved it every single time he did that.
I just love the conversation that they were having when he was giving them that ticket. I just loved he just kind of popped up randomly.
Pay for it.
Yeah.
I know where you live.
But then like during the conversation, he's like, but are you going to come to the celebration? He's like, of course I'm going to that. It's like one of the scenarios in which I want more Olaf, but I think they gave me enough. They gave me the perfect amount here, which I thought was great. Not like the Americans here, but I'm glad you did this right, at least for the Olaf characters. Even like some of the other side characters that was like
like Arnold the cop. The
police. Yeah, exactly. And the police officer was calling him weird. He's like, your brother rides a horse backwards. Like, what are you talking about? I love some of the banter there. Like, some of the lines are just like comedic lines, which is great. Blue, what you got for your MVP?
Yeah, like I said, this is me cutting and pasting from earlier, but yeah, no, it's Dan Stevens and the actress who played Nita, who was Melissa. Nope. That's going to be a no. I thought it was Melissa, but there's more letters after that.
No.
Melissanthi Mahout.
Melissandra, close.
Yeah. Sorry, my Boston accent with those A's is an impossibility, and I'm sorry. Miss Mahout or
Mahout. Did the performance capture for Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Origins.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Yeah, no, they were phenomenal together. I thought that was such an intriguing pairing, and intriguing like backstories and motivations. They were actually like really fleshed out characters for a comedy.
Yeah,
I would say Rachel McAdams as Sigrid was my MVP. I just liked it. Feels like with all the chaos and the humor and everything going around, she kept it honest and relatively straight and had some of her weird kind of quirky and kind of funny moments. But it wasn't like, it was just kind of nice to see sort of a straight character going after a goal. We've seen this story before, right? Like the person going after their dream. Clearly, somebody's telling her to speak from the heart and avoid all the other nonsense that people are kind of piling up on it. So just nice to see her kind of sit there and kind of sing, and it was really endearing, and it was really, really cute.
Also, Rachel McAdams might be the best actress of best actress at taking brutal lines. Her outside of the Eurovision studio, like when Will Ferrell gave up on her. And then also in Doctor Strange, when she's like, well, who's going to help you? And he's like, what do you mean? You? Like, she takes those lines and then just like makes you, even though it's a superhero in a comedy movie, you're just like, oh my God, no, hug her, please. Like, she's.
And at the same time, Will Ferrell's like, I'm going to have sex with that person.
Yeah, it's not great.
Except for Theo.
And Nina. Nita's out. The guy with the clipboard.
It's like lines like that that I really enjoy in this film. It's so ridiculous. It's like, okay, I'm getting hints of like classic Will Ferrell. So let's move into our lasting thoughts and conclusions. If you would recommend this film or maybe some other works that we would tell people to check out, Marilyn?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, this is a return to form for Will Ferrell. It's a hilarious Will Ferrell ass comedy, but also at the same time, like we mentioned, it's actually really amazingly grounded in the reality around Eurovision, but also at the same time honors it really well, which I think is really cool. You usually see like lampoon movies just eviscerate whatever their topic is, but this one actually honors it in a very ridiculous way, which I think is really cool. And I would say, like, if you want to watch it more Will Ferrell being amazing and everything, watch Old School, or maybe watch Wedding Crashers, because his bit part in there is amazing as well.
Blue, what you got?
Yeah, I feel like we gave this movie like the best review we've given any movie in the past, which might be because Code 8 came out like recently. This movie is not that good. It is dumb as hell. Like, you will lose brain cells watching this movie. But God, it's 2020 and we probably needed a brain cell like loser of a movie. You know, like, it's dumb. It's really dumb. But it's so endearing and well done. And the music, if you're into terrible over the top pop music like I am, there's no way you won't like this movie, regardless of like Will Ferrell is not old school Will Ferrell anymore, right? He's calmed down from that. He's not going to go streaking through the quad anymore. but he still knows how to do these roles, and he still knows how to get a laugh from like ridiculous like circumstance. I would recommend just watching Eurovision. If we're looking for recommendations, go watch. Like it's actually phenomenal.
Get on YouTube, start just typing Eurovision and just go to town.
Yep. Start with Epic Sax Guy, because that's a very easy American meme to get into. My person, Vertka Saduchka, the Turkish person that I referred to earlier was Kenan Degulu with Shake It Up, Shake a Rim. That song is hot. That song would do well now. Definitely recommend checking it out.
It's better than Hanging With My Homies.
I mean, everything pales in comparison with Yeah Yeah Ding Dong.
You're not wrong there. So definitely would recommend the film. Blue and I absolutely agree with you. I think the biggest difference of why I think we like this film so much is, yes, it's a silly premise. Yes, it's a parody. Yes, it's dumb. But they didn't do it poorly. Like, the story made sense. It's a logical story that's going through. We are introduced to characters. Each character has motivations. We have enough backstory. And it's physically a story that's like, yeah, this is a script that it can make sense from A to B. Now, the content of what they're talking about is absolutely flop and ridiculous, but it still has some heart to it. This is why I like this film. This is my epitome of a popcorn film, where I think people's like, well, a shitty horror movie. No, I'm not going to fucking watch a shitty horror movie because it's a shitty horror movie. This one here is a funny movie. It still has character. It still has beats in this film that I think it's something that a lot of films just does not do. Code 8. Yes, I am talking to you. What the fuck? It just straight up just didn't do. And it's like, wait, hold up. How did we jump from this to this? And even in this movie, we're basically saying this movie was great, but it was too long. Not because we didn't understand the story, but because we wanted to get to more of the story just faster. There was other stuff they can cut out. Whereas the other movies is, we wanted to be longer because we didn't fucking understand what the hell was happening in the film, you know? So that's why I think I would recommend this film. Two films to check out, I think, Step Brothers. Brylan.
Okay, I'll watch.
Definitely should watch that. If you are sort of a Will Ferrell fan, I think that's going to be absolutely kind of great for you. And then if you're a Rachel McAdams fan, if you want to look at another of her works kind of similar to this, a different type of romantic comedy, About Time, one of my favorite movies, arguably maybe one of my favorite. God,
that's
damn
what
it,
Dominic Gleason, right?
Rylan, why are you doing this to me? Oh, my gosh.
Are in there. Damn.
Come on. Yeah, About Time is low-key a phenomenal movie. I think it was something that me and Emma like bonded on the first date. And I think it's probably my top three favorite movies ever. Yes, Adventure Time is up there, but it's a TV show. But yes, a Goofy movie is up there as well. I'll let your boy. So it's a beautiful movie. It's absolutely amazing. And Rachel McAdams plays such a good part in the film. Dominic Gleeson absolutely crushes that film, though. So definitely go check that out.
Is it better than The Notebook?
Yes. I also think The Notebook is kind of trash. Yes, Nicholas
Sparks. I've never
seen
The Notebook.
Word on the street is Nicholas Sparks wrote Code 8. So.
Oh, jeez.
I'm just kidding. No, I did not like The Notebook just because of... Yeah, I really don't like when you string people along. And yeah, let's not... We don't need to go... That's a whole other conversation.
That's another podcast.
That's another podcast. And with that, we have been the Down in Front Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining in. Beautiful Brylan, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can find me running outside really drunk to yell at Maya Noos to play Ya Ya Ding Dong again on Twitter at Brylan, B-R-I-L-U-N-D. You can also find me posting many movie and TV reviews on Instagram at I Am Brylan. I finally have recently put up my Westworld Season 3 review, and also did put up a review for Run as well.
I feel like you're pointing that at me because I was like, oh yeah, there it is. Nice. Good stuff, man. Blewett, what about you? Where can we find more of your work? What you got coming up? We know you're going to be recording Yaya Ding Dong.
Yeah, so I feel like that's like an actuality now
yeah,
at this point.
I need an 808 version. I need an acapella version. Like, I need these, please.
Yeah. So, actually, that is an album that I have stopped working on. It was just a quarantine meme. So if anyone has any ideas on meme songs that have come out specifically during the quarantine time, let us know and I will make them and you'll laugh at my terrible singing voice because I can't have my singer over because I don't want to give him coronavirus. But yeah, no, I kind of wish this movie did a little bit better so we could just do the entire soundtrack in like a punk version. But you could check us out for more serious stuff at that. No, it's not more serious. It's dumb as hell. At My News Music and My News Band on most major platforms. You can also check us out live in the streets, if you will. You just have to follow Jesse Rand in public bathrooms yelling Yaya Ding Dong. And Maya News will show up and probably, you know, hang out.
That doesn't sound weird at all. If you need some vocals, bro, holler at your boy. I don't mind laying some tracks with you. That'd be great. Check them over at downinfrontpodcast.com where you're going to see a video teasers, lots of information, lots of updates are going to be happening to our website. We added a new section for our Down in Front Podcast conversation, which is a separate bit of a series that we've been going to be talking about some a little bit more sort of real issues, especially what's happening in 2020. So definitely kind of check that out in our media section. We're going to have our bios going to be up there. All of our work from other Twitter at _DAFP. We're going to be on Reddit. We're going to be on Facebook. We have SoundCloud where we're going to have our version of Yaya Ding Dong probably in the next couple of days. No rush, though. Perfect. No rush. As Blewett cackles back there. That's something that you'll check this out. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate everybody's time being here. Brylan, what we got up next?
I'm glad you asked, Warren. As always, you can always go to @_DFP on Twitter to see our weekly poll where you, yes, you the listener, yes, you, Ryan Dowd, yes, you, Derek Song, can go on Twitter and help us choose our next review. So we actually have four movies that we chose this time. We got the movie, well, I guess it's not the movie version, it's the recorded performance of Hamilton on Disney Plus. Nice. We have Seaburg that's on Amazon Prime. We have Desperados on Netflix. And also, even though it says Warrior on the vote, this is actually for Warrior Nun. And so it's Warrior Nun on Netflix. There's just a little nun that should have been put in there. So my apologies to Mr. Blewett.
We're watching the Warriors. Yeah.
The Warriors, yeah, that'd be sick. I would say that's a good one too.
I'm pretty sure I know who's gonna mop up. I'm pretty sure I know who's gonna mop up that poll, but we'll see.
You should check out the poll right now.
Warrior none.
Well, no, it's just Warrior. So it could be Ultimate Warrior. There's a couple of movies. You never know.
There was a Finnish biker gang series called Warrior that's 6 episodes on Netflix.
Well, we'll never know. Maybe it could win. It could win. Possible. I'll be pissed. Whatever. Yeah. All right, everybody. We will see you next week. Thanks so much and good night.
See ya.